The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, here it is, Friday again. Wrapping up another week, getting ready for a weekend. Hope yours will be good for you. Going down to Florida to talk to our friend and colleague, Harry Cooper, who runs Shark Hunters, one of the most unusual and unique organizations on the planet that has done more individually and maybe even collectively than any other organization I can think of to bring history into accord with the facts, with reality, with the truth. World War II history, most specifically, and the years thereafter. And we are still, of course, feeling the repercussions of all that, and will for the rest of our lives, and on and on and on. The winners of the war write the history. The history we read has little to do with reality. It was quite an epoch and quite an effort by a country the size of the state of Texas to literally turn the world around in a whole different direction than it was being programmed to follow. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, and we are where we are today. Our, quote, government is not our government. It is not a government except in name. It is run by an external foreign power. I ran a story today that made it quite clear that the Republican members of the Senate care more about the welfare of the Zionist, racist, indisputably racist, apartheid, genocidal state of Israel than they do about America. You begin to get the point? Black is white. Everything is upside down and backwards. We are controlled. Those people in D.C. don't give a damn about us. Nothing. They don't care. Oh, there's a handful, but they're so outnumbered it isn't even funny. We have to go through about another, well, almost 2 years with this Oreo cookie, this white man in the White House. Well, you can call him black if you want. It's your choice. It's 50-50. Will we make it? I don't know. I really don't know. The way he has used the Constitution as a piece of toilet paper and written his executive orders all over the walls, and no one, not a single member of the alleged government of this country, allegedly representing you, your thoughts, your wishes, your aspirations, has stood up and spoken the truth. I have never seen a more grotesque assemblage of bootlicking, butt-licking slime in my life as that which is running for the presidency of this alleged republic. Gee, I wonder where that came from. Hi, Harry, how are you?
I'm just listening. Tell us how you really feel. Don't hold back.
No, I'm sorry. I'm shy.
Oh, it's an interesting editorial.
That is just the truth.
It ain't the country that I was a kid in, that's for sure, but that was another era. I was a kid during the war years, and I was thinking, this morning I was brushing my teeth, and I got to thinking how things have changed. When I was a kid, you didn't grab for the toothpaste, because there was no such thing. You had powder you sprinkled on your brush.
Tooth powder.
Yeah,
baking
right.
Soda. Yeah.
And
works better, by the way. It doesn't have fluoride either.
And Dad didn't grab the foamy shaving stuff out of a squirt can. He had a mug that he beat up a piece of soap in there, and then he took a straight razor and shaved his face.
He had a brush in the mug.
Yep.
I remember seeing those in pictures. And they'd rattle around and make a foam and foam up the face. It was kind of a ritual. So, yeah, Dad used to grab that. Now Dad grabs waitresses' fannies in restaurants.
Well, no, I used the old brush and mug method now, too, because I find that is really a good shave, and my wife got me a bunch of that stuff for Christmas a year and a half ago. And
you use that? How nice. So you've got a mug and a brush.
Yep. And it takes me probably 10 minutes, whereas before it was 2 minutes, but really nice. I mean, with the hot water on your face and all that, and it's called The Art of Shaving is the product brand, and boy, it's nice. So, but not only the technology has changed, but the attitude has changed. We see on the news the other day about a guy and his wife got arrested because their two children walked home from the park. One was 6, one was 10.
Uh-huh.
Man, when I was...
They were arrested for this.
Yeah, right. It was on national news the beginning of the week because they let their kids... They call it free range now because mm-hmm. they let their children walk home alone from the park a couple of blocks. When I was a kid, we lived in Chicago, and I'd want to go to the movie theater. I was, you know, like 5 years old, and my folks would give me a dime, excuse me, and I'd walk to the movie theater 4 blocks away along North Avenue. And when I was like 10 or 12, we lived out in the suburbs, and I would take a bus all by myself. Had to transfer to another bus,
uh-huh.
and it was like about a 20-something mile ride to go to the YMCA to learn to swim, or my folks would give me a quarter, and I'd take 2 buses on a Saturday and go to the movie theater, and for a quarter, I could ride the bus both ways, I could get into the movie theater, and I could even buy popcorn. Now, if you let your child walk alone anywhere, the police are all over you for endangering your child.
Well, you know,
the way the society is, your child is in danger.
They're right. You should never let your child out of your sight.
Yep.
Or really out of arm's distance. They can pull up next to the curb, grab your kid, and they're gone in 3.2 seconds.
Yeah. As you know, I lost my son.
Yeah.
He was killed when he was 20, and that was way back in 1984. Then he got married again in 85, and we have 2 children. My son is now 27. He's special needs. And our daughter is going to be 24 in a couple of weeks, and she's a 4.0 student in her master's program. Mm-hmm. We were the real hardcore helicopter parents.
Right.
Sean went to a special school, so he rode a special bus. But our daughter, she did not ride the school bus. I used to ride a school bus. I know what went on the school buses way back when I was young. Nowadays, oh my God, you know, it's just grabbing and groping and smoking dope and stuff on a school bus. So,
yeah, and the drivers are intimidated. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I just couldn't even imagine putting my child in government schools.
Mm-hmm.
No, and the whole thing now with the parents buying their 8-year-olds smartphones, they're nuts. They're nuts. They're just dumb. Dumber than dirt.
I know. When my daughter was 8, I think it was, she wanted a TV set in her own room. I said, what are you, crazy? We got 3 color TV sets in the house. And I said, when I was your age, we didn't even have a TV set. And she says, oh, wow, was Grammy and Grandpa that poor? I said, no, it wasn't even invented yet. So, you know, you've got all this stuff now. And today I just drove up a couple of hours to meet with an agent for a couple of TV shows.
Uh-huh.
And I'm driving along, and I look out my right window, and there's a car next to me. We're doing about 50 miles an hour. There's a stupid broad driving the car. She had her smartphone with both hands on the smartphone, and her thumbs are banging away. She was texting. So I just pushed the button and got away from her, passed another guy. He's on the damn cell phone talking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I pushed the button again, you know, that's racer talk for hit the gas.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled up beside another one, and this woman's got her left arm out the window with a cigarette in it, and she's got her cell phone in the right hand, who's steering the car?
You're driving with their knees.
Apparently so. So, you know, this modern technology, and some years ago when my daughter, I think, was 18, the boyfriend she was going with at that time, for Thanksgiving, he had a really big family, so we all got together for Thanksgiving. We had this big, long table, and everybody's talking, you know, it's loud and everything, but I noticed they're sitting across the table from each other, and they're not saying a word. They got their cell phone down in their lap, and they're texting each other across the table. I said, give me that phone. But modern technology is a double-edged sword.
Triple.
Okay.
You got... You've got a whole lot of pictures on the internet now.
Yeah.
There are YouTube videos of people in groups and so forth. They all have their cell phone. I say it is the most addictive technology ever because it reinforces the quote end quote self-worth of the person with the phone. If they get messages, they feel validated. They feel worthy. If they don't get messages, they start to doubt themselves. I'm telling you, there's a whole psychology here that has yet to be assayed or put in a book or a documentary. This is devastating to the individuality of people. It is hyper-herd mentality pushed and fomented by this electronic technology, which
yeah.
does not quit. They had, I've told this story before, but it's still going on, teens and preteens and tweens, get cell phones, go to bed at night, and they'll dial each other up, say 8 or 10 in a group, and they'll do a conference call, and they'll all go to sleep, or otherwise, and all night long that phone is on under their, whichever side of their head they're laying on, and they'll wake up and mumble and talk to their friends, and they'll go back to sleep, and all night long their brains are being irradiated with RF, and they're going to get brain cancer, a lot of them.
Wow. Wow. Well.
It's true. It's
just
a fad.
Well, I was tough with Megan. And Sean, he's just got his phone with him in case of emergency. And when he's coming home on the bus, he'll pick up his phone, turn it on, and call me. And I'll answer the phone. Hi, Sean. How you doing? Well, coming home, Dad. Okay. Put your phone away and enjoy the ride.
That's nice.
Then he goes back to sleep. He loves sleeping on the bus. As
really?
For myself, I can honestly say I don't text while I drive because I don't know how to text. I'm too damn dumb and I never learned it.
I've seen some flying thumbs around.
Yeah.
They can't spell. You know, the phones have predictive spelling. All you have to do is get the first two or three letters and they'll finish the word for you right there on the phone. So.
Well,
the intellectual acumen of people is disintegrating at light speed.
And here there's times of, you know, especially if I'm having kind of a harsh day, I'll pull up alongside somebody at a traffic light and they'll be on their cell phone, or even if we're driving along at slow speeds, I'll roll down the window and yell out, get off the damn phone and drive your car. You know, what can they do to me in Florida?
Well, they can shoot you.
Well, I hope they don't. But,
yeah, people, that's road rage. How dare you? How dare you get in someone's space like that?
Well, yeah, but in Florida, you don't dare have road rage against a senior citizen. You don't dare put your hands on a senior citizen. It's a third-degree felony. You go to prison for 5 years.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I like Florida. I can be as obnoxious as can be, and nobody
better put their hands on. They protect their older people. How interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's senior citizens. Our Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's God's waiting room down here.
Please.
It really is. And in my county, we've got the oldest average age in Florida. I'm closing in on 76 years old, and I'm about the average age here.
Wow.
So well, we don't have much of a crime problem. The younger people, yeah, they're messing with drugs and stuff, but there's no gangbangers, there's no drive-by shootings, because how many 85-year-old crackheads are going to break into your house? They ain't any.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I got far afield. My apologies.
No, it's fine. That's the world it is. And
yeah.
One wonders, as I started out saying, what the world might have turned out to be had things gone differently in World War II.
Yeah. Well, let me toss a little more to your comment. You said the winners write the history. You're absolutely right. But taking it a step further, the winners get to determine who are the war heroes and who are the war criminals, and they also get to write the ex post facto definition of a war criminal.
Sure.
So whatever you're doing during the war, if it's okay, if you lose after the war, they make it illegal, so they back up. Well, you did something 2 years ago that was legal then, but it's illegal now, but it's retroactive, and so now you're guilty. There's a guy named Tom Goodrich, wrote a book called Hellstorm.
He's written another one.
Yeah, he's doing another one about the South Pacific.
Yeah, he's
I talk to him about usually once a week on the phone, and I'm not so sure I'm going to be sympathetic towards the second one. It's about the atrocities committed in the South Pacific. The Japanese were horrendous to American and British prisoners. So, you know, they couldn't be surprised at what they got in return. However, his other book, Hellstorm, which describes what absolute horrors befell the Germans,
mm-hmm.
and they were honorable fighters, and yet when they surrendered, for God's sake, that's when the atrocities really started. The Soviets sent in mostly Mongolian troops initially.
That's what they did. They went east and got the most primitive killers they could get their hands on.
Yep, and sent them into what became East Germany, like East Prussia, Pomerania, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a so-called newscaster, a guy named Ilya Ehrenberg.
He was one of the most evil alleged human beings ever to walk the surface of this planet.
Yeah, he was on the radio constantly telling them to rape the German women and break their spirit. And if they haven't killed a German that day, they haven't done
their job,
their duty for Mother Russia. And this was after Germany had surrendered and they had no arms. And we're not talking about soldiers they're killing. They were killing soldiers too, prisoners. But then they're killing some poor old farmer who's like 60 or 70 years old.
They killed that. They kill everybody.
Everybody, anybody. And, you know, you look at history, and that's what happens to the vanquished nation every single war. That don't make it right. But, you know, and you got to wonder, when does it end? When does anybody have any decency left after a war? Maybe we shouldn't have wars. And I am certainly not a peacenik. I'm a veteran, and when I was a young man, I wanted to kill communists because we were told they were horrible, evil people. And then I was over in the Soviet Union, 1991, and Mikhail Gorbachev ordered the chief of their navy to invite me over. So I was over there for 2 weeks. And we found out we weren't different at all. We just wore different uniforms.
Well, as I think many of our listeners, especially your wonderful organization who are listening now, know, the so-called Soviets, in most cases, were not Russian people. They were interlopers sent in from the outside to overthrow the Tsar. They were Zionist, Bolshevik, Marxists. These are not Russian people. They weren't Russian. Ilya Ehrenberg was not a Russian.
He was not a nice guy either. And yet, they're just now making him a real hero in Germany. When, as you know, I take history groups over there every year.
Oh, yeah.
We go, and we're going again this September. If anybody wants information, just send me an email.
Trip of a lifetime, folks.
Yeah, sharkhunters@earthlink.net. We're there for 2 weeks. Start out in Munich, and we visit some of the famous buildings. Then we go to Nuremberg, and we visit the famous buildings there too. And the point I'm zeroing in here, we used to go to room 600, where the Nuremberg tribunals were held, because it was an operating courtroom, and courts were in session. But because we have a friend on the inside, he always made sure that there was no court scheduled for that particular day when we were there. Well, 2 or 3 years ago, they converted it into a museum and documentation center. You know what documentation center means over there. And they had pictures of Ilya Ehrenberg and various other correspondents as wonderful heroes.
And then we know who was behind converting it to a museum.
Yeah, and documentation center. You know what that means, but I won't say it on the air because I traveled to Germany and I don't want to get arrested.
Right.
But they finally got around to posting what the real sentence was for the guys they decided were war criminals. It was not hanging.
They didn't hang them.
That's right. It was strangling.
Yep.
Just put a rope around their neck and hang them up and watch them kick and dance. And not even in their military uniform, which was, you know, that's the ultimate disgrace to a soldier. To be executed by a firing squad while you're wearing your uniform is an honorable way to be executed for a soldier. But in civilian clothes, being strangled. Anyhow.
Well, understand, we have to take a break. Understand, if you do your reading, you'll understand who was behind, who orchestrated, who ran the entire Nuremberg trials.
Yeah.
It was a particular group of people, and there is just no disputing it. That we know.
It was Nuremberg tribunals, not trials, because
yep.
the outcome was predetermined.
Correct.
And when you come back from break, I can fill in the rest of our tour to South Germany.
Yeah, do. Okay. This would be a great tour. All right. Hold on. Back with Harry in just a minute. Okay, I'm back with Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. You got to go there. Harry takes trips, patrols, a couple times a year, and he's going to southern Germany this next time in the fall. Tell us more.
Okay, it's the end of September and early October, two weeks. Like I say, we get there to Munich. We spend a few days touring some of the famous places in Munich. Then we go to Nuremberg and tour. You know, that's where the party rallies were. And a lot of these structures are still standing. They're in very bad repair because nobody wants to spend the money. But we also go to the stadium where you've seen all the films. Hitler is standing and speaking to everybody. Well, everybody can go there, and we do. But what's inside that structure, that stadium? You go around the back, there's a door that says Eingang Verboten. And you and I both know that means shark hunters are welcome.
Right.
And we go inside, and that's the famous Golden Room, which is where Hitler used to have receptions, and the ceilings are still inlaid with the golden swastikas, and Hitler's private office is up one level. We go there. It's all, I mean, there's nothing left in the office. Everything is taken out, just four walls.
Right.
But we get to go in places like that. And our friend who gives us the tour is incredibly knowledgeable. He's the assistant to the Lord Mayor over there, and he's also a lieutenant colonel in the army, their army, and he's a battalion commander. He's a sharp guy. He knows what he's talking about. Then we go to a small little cabinet sort of thing on the street. Looks like a big outhouse. And there's no doors, no windows, or nothing, but there's a big poster of an Elvis impersonator, and if you peel the corner away, there's a keyhole. He puts in the key, opens, and a door opens up, and we go in there. There's a huge underground bunker system, and we tour through that. Then from there, we go down to southern Austria, and the drive from Nuremberg south to southern Austria is just right out of a picture book. It's just incredibly beautiful. And we spent 4 or 5 days down in Carinthia province. And one of the days we take a cruise on the beautiful lake they have there, just sightseeing. But then the Friday and the Saturday night, we have fellowship dinners with hundreds of veterans, mostly from the German Wehrmacht. Saturday afternoon, we're guests at the their version of the Navy League, the Marine Kameradschaft, and we get together in their headquarters, which is a sort of a club like an American Legion Hall or a VFW, and everybody gets to be friends with everybody. We have beer, bratwurst, stuff like that, and then Sunday is the biggest day of the whole tour. We have the memorial service up on top of Ulrich's Mountain. There's a destroyed church, which has been turned into a giant memorial. And there's a huge, huge cross, stands probably about 100 feet tall. And they have a ceremony in which they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform the guy was wearing, no matter what flag, everyone who fell in battle. It's the only memorial I know of in the world where they remember everybody from all sides, from all nations. And then we go to the area around Berchtesgaden and over Salzburg, and we go through some bunkers and tunnels under the mountain there, and we see the escape door in Hitler's bunker. Can't get in it because it's locked. Maybe they're expecting Hitler to come back. I don't think so. And we take a cruise on the Königssee. And, then of course we do, when we're in Munich, we do squeeze in one day at Oktoberfest, which is an interesting situation. if you've never been to Oktoberfest, you really ought to go. It's just a huge, big state fair.
Well, if you have one really good day at Oktoberfest, then you probably sleep most of the way home on the plane.
Yeah. Well, I don't drink, so I don't get blotto. I know I'm not a very good Irishman. I don't drink. I did that back in the days when I was a professional racing driver. I drank a lot. And when I lived on my boat in the Bahamas, I drank a lot because rum was cheaper than water. But, you know, you get to the point where you figure, you know, why bother?
So you switched to Entenmann's, and you've been doing just fine ever since.
Oh, yeah. The last time I was drunk was February of 1987. It just ain't fun anymore.
You remember that. Did you throw up? Is that why you remember it?
No. I was just, that was our first convention ever. And I had a couple buddies down there with me. They were some of the collectors I used when I worked for the Moustaches, but that's another story. And we were drinking and drinking and drinking. We were drunk for 2 days straight. And then about 10 o'clock on the second day of being drunk.
In the morning or night?
At night.
Uh-huh.
I was going through the hotel lobby. And we had a huge contingent come in from Germany. We had 11 Germans come over, veterans from the war years, U-boat veterans, 3 skippers. One of them had the Knight's Cross. He turned out to be my very best friend in Germany later on. But I'm trying to walk through the lobby to get to my bed and die. And I hear the desk clerk say, "Oh, there's Mr. Cooper now." And Captain Hess, the guy that became my best friend later in Germany. "Oh, Herr Cooper, you will join us for a drink?"
Oh, my God.
Oh, goody. after that, I just decided, no, this ain't worth it. So I do try to have a small glass of port wine in the evenings, because whenever I go to visit, the first time I went to visit Otto Kretschmer,
mm-hmm.
Bingo, it's a Navy tradition. Come in, Mr. Cooper, and here's a glass of port. So I try to keep that tradition going here, you know, for those guys.
Sure.
I knew most of those skippers and a lot of the officers and crews, and they were all decent, honorable men. Tradition and honor was everything to those guys. So, you know.
You've just had a blessed life, and
oh,
met
sure
some
did.
Extraordinary people.
Just, I hear music in the background, and we're going to sell stuff.
Take a little break here and come right back. Just a couple minutes.
Go make a cup of tea.
Yeah, be right back. Okay, welcome back with Harry. Once a month, 2 hours. And he is just busier than ever. SharkHunters.com will avail you of the opportunity to delve into history firsthand, first person, told in book form, DVDs, in the voices and in the words of the people who lived it. Just something that you cannot duplicate in a Hollywood movie. There was one film, Das Boot, which was as, I guess, as realistic as it could be. I mean, it was real.
Yeah. There was an excellent, book, excellent movie, and
should you see it with subtitles or the dubbed version?
Everything. We had them all as VHS taped. We had the first one, which was just totally spoken in German. Then we had another one that was overspoken in English. Then we had another one that was with subtitles. Then we had the director's cut of 5 hours. Then we had another cut that was 6.5 hours.
Wow. Did that add much to it? Did it get
It showed a lot of, you know, as you see various scenes in the movie.
Uh-huh.
This gives you all the lead up and then the trailing off afterwards. You know, there were other scenes, too, that we didn't see until you got to the long version.
So you liked the long version?
Oh, yeah. It was excellent. And the interesting thing about it, that boat, of course, that was a fictionalized story, but that was based on the cruise of U-96 under Captain Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrook, who was a member of Shark Hunters until he died. He did not die in combat like the movie shows. He he went on to become a flotilla commander and then ultimately died of sickness when he was sometime in the 1980s.
What did he think of the film?
Well, interesting. He didn't make much comment, but some of the other ones did. They even wrote a counter book. It's in English, the title is We U-Boaters Say No, It Was Not This Way, and then the subtitle is an anti-Buchheim book.
Huh.
And all you had to do is mention the name Buchheim, and they start foaming at the mouth. Movie, we denounce the movie, and then you press them a little bit, mm-hmm. and then they'll grudgingly admit it's a great movie, mm-hmm. but they don't like Buchheim. And they were right. It was a great movie. But Buchheim wrote another book that never made it anywhere, and the title was something like We're Winning Until They Kill Us. And it was just a slap in the face from page one to page final, a slap mm-hmm. in the face against Gross mm-hmm. Admiral Karl Dönitz. And you just don't badmouth Dönitz to the U-boaters.
No.
He was like their father, like darn near a god. Yeah. They worship the guy.
Well, you talk about towering integrity. And, you just run out of words for some of these people.
Yeah, he was a great man. And they tried to execute him at with Nuremberg until who was it? Nimitz, Admiral Nimitz,
stepped
commander,
in.
Comsub pact for the United States. He came up and told the Nuremberg tribunals, hey, he didn't do anything we didn't do. But they still had to have their pound of flesh, and they still put him in prison for 10 years. So, that's basically what we do on our tour there. And if any of your listeners want information, all they have to do is just send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and just say they heard the show tonight and want information about that, and we'll get it off to them. Also, I think I told you, we're going back to Argentina in January, and anybody who wants to go, I'll have that data up shortly. I'm going myself in July.
There's a lot more down there to be discovered.
Folks, you're not kidding. Just recently, the press came out with photos, it was 2 weeks ago, a Nazi hideout.
I sent that to you.
Yeah, and so did half the members. We were inundated with it. And as I pointed out to you and the membership, those are the same pictures one of my guys took.
Years ago.
Well, he sent it to us on the 7th of June last year. The same doggone pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But now some schmo says he discovered it himself. And it was a Nazi hideout. No, it wasn't. It was one of Mengele's homes. And so I'll be there in July. It's in someplace in Misiones. And my people down there say, well, you might not be able to get to it. Well,
you'll get to it.
I'll get there.
You'll get there.
And if the police show up, I just, like I do in Germany, I go into my best down yonder hillbilly. Well, golly, Sheriff, I don't understand your language. I'm sure it's important, but if worse comes to worse, they just throw me out.
How many veterans are there now, still? Hundreds? Thousands?
What, on the German
World War
side,
II.
American
yeah.
side?
German side.
On the German side, from the U-boats, wow.
Couple
darn
hundred?
Few.
Yeah.
Skippers, I can only think of two off the top of my head, maybe three. Mm. And as you saw in our latest magazine that just came out on the front cover, there was a picture of Reinhard Hardhagen,
mm-hmm.
and the commander of U-123 that sank the first ship in American waters. He just turned 102, and he hasn't changed in the last 20, 25 years that I've known him. And like I said, I got an email from his 70-something-year-old son. The three kids are all panic-stricken because their 102-year-old father is still driving his Mercedes on the Autobahn. I told the kid, don't worry about it. Here in Florida, that's normal. You got to be old to get along in Florida.
Well, a nice story. I'm glad some of these people are still with us. And
he's a great guy. He was one of only 28 skippers to be decorated with the oak leaf to the Knight's Cross. He's still alive. Professor Brunig is still alive. He was commander of U-108 for one patrol, then he was training skippers. And I can't think of any other skipper still alive. As far as officers and crew, living officers, you could probably count them on one hand, maybe two hands. Crewmen, not many. Only 5,000 lived through the war.
Correct.
But most of the veterans we see when we're at this memorial down in southern Austria, most of them are from the 5th SS, the Viking Division, or Wiking as they call it. And I was just over there about a month ago, and I was in the office of one of my contacts, and one of the veterans who I know really well walked in and didn't know I was there, and his eyes about popped out of his head. Shook hands with him again. My hand wasn't working for about 2 days after that. This old guy is 95 years old, and he's just as tough as nails. He was a tank commander with the 5th SS Panzers, and then he got wounded, and so they made him a forward observer. These guys are all so nice. And when we get together for the fellowship evenings, you know, if you don't speak German, so what? Most of them don't speak English, but they'll find a couple guys at the table that can translate.
Sure.
Or like they say, mit Hand und Fuß, wir verstanden. With hand and foot, we understand. So in other words, make a lot of signs and stuff.
Well, if they drink enough, they also, the language barrier comes down rather quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, when they leave, everybody leaves with new friends.
That's nice. Well, the idea of honoring all men and women from all countries who fell under all flags is of course, the ultimate statement of forgiveness and humanity.
And decency. They were honorable men.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what we do on that tour then in January.
We should also mention, we just have a minute left in this hour.
Okay.
That yesterday was Holocaust Remembrance Day. And I would rather think of it as a day that we remember all people who died in the work camps, in the labor camps, the concentration camps, the gypsies, the political prisoners, the foreigners who were captured in where they shouldn't be and put in labor camps, certainly the Jews of Europe. Anyone and everyone should be honored equally.
Let's not forget the 1.1 million that were starved to death after
that.
The war. Oh, okay, I'll shut up and let you take the lead.
No, and then we need to have a day for those people that General Dwight David Eisenhower personally executed. He might as well have shot them one by one with a revolver.
Lot quicker than starving them to death.
Yeah. Well, Eisenhower was one of the most heinous figures in history, in my book, right with Churchill, FDR, who ran the most overtly obvious communist administration in this country's history, up to and probably including this one. So we have history corrupted, history perverted, tragically. But those who study, those who live through it, are those who know the truth. So, no, one group is not necessarily better than the other.
Yeah.
I don't group all peoples of any persuasion together, never have, never will. But there are certain things that are irrefutable, and when you look at the Zionist privately owned country, owned by the Rothschild banking cartel, called Israel, completely subsidized by Harry Cooper, Jeff Rentz, and all of you other American taxpayers out there.
Maybe that's why I'm getting such an attack against my book. You know, there's one guy who's attacking it now on Amazon, and there's three others.
Oh, no, they're paid trolls.
Oh, I know that.
We'll talk about that more in a couple of minutes.
On the other side.
Yeah, hang on. We'll
right
be back.
On.
Okay, welcome back. Hour number two on this Friday with Harry Cooper, SharkHunters.com. A couple more words, if I may, about Germany during the war. And Lord knows you know far more than I do about it. But I was fortunate in my earlier years to have known people who lived through the war and survived it. I used to rent a room over a garage from a German couple. He was wounded in North Africa. She somehow paid the penalty with the Russian hordes and survived. And just wonderful people. And they told me that these labor camps, work camps, were crucial to the German war industry. And that by 1943, because of the around-the-clock bombing by the Brits and the Americans, and these bombings were not carried out by and large on industrial or military targets, they were bombing civilians. Simple. Cities, towns, killing people, trying to break the spirit of the German nation. He said that by 1943, half the country was virtually on the edge of starvation. And yet they were still trying desperately to ship food. Look, I'm not justifying rounding people up and putting them in any camp. All right, let's get that straight. But the idea that these people were all liquidated by gas chamber, and this is me talking, not Harry Cooper, is ludicrous for 100 different reasons. Many of them died of typhus and other diseases, but especially typhus. And lots of the pictures you'll see of corpses piled up, if you look at them and you have a brain in your head, they're all skin and bones. They died of near starvation, no immune system. It didn't have to happen, but it did. But they weren't gassed and thrown in big piles. This has got to be understood. Yes, they died. Yes, the Red Cross was there, and in 1948, the Red Cross issued the International Red Cross a formal report that said approximately 200,000 to 250,000 people died in all the labor camps in Germany and Poland during World War II. The Red Cross is not stupid. All right, this is after Nuremberg, after the trials. This is when people were really trying to put the whole thing together. So keep in mind, the winners write the story. All right, that's all I'm trying to get across. Things were not as they were. I talked to one fellow. He said at the age of 12, he stood below the balcony and watched Hitler give a speech. He was there. He said we would get, in 1944, early 45, if we had one potato, we'd boil it in a big pot of water, and that would be our meal. They had no food. And yet you have to keep in mind that the rail lines to the main labor camps, folks, like Auschwitz, were never bombed or interrupted because they were making money for the Western banking interests that were involved on both sides of the war, throughout the war, before the war, and after the war. And after the war from 1945 to 53, some say. Let's call it 45 to 53. About 5 to 8 million Germans were hunted down and killed by certain groups who wanted to make sure that Germany never rose politically again. Even Churchill in his biography said the war wasn't about defeating National Socialism. It was about destroying Germany and its people once and for all. Winston Churchill. So understand that when Eisenhower presided over the extermination over 1.1 million, many older men, young boys who were in German uniforms, many who were not even from Germany, out in the fields, he let them die in the mud, in the dirt, no food, no sanitary facility, nothing. It was a mass execution. You don't hear about that. You hear about General Dwight Eisenhower, war hero. No, no. He was not a hero. He was a mass murderer. And there were lots of them to go around. We haven't even talked about the Soviet side. But just keep in mind, the winners write the story. That's the last time I'm going to tell you that. If you want to read about the sellout by FDR and the Communist administration in this country, go online and read. Just type in Major Jordan, apostrophe S, Major Jordan's diaries, and read what an American major saw firsthand that was going on throughout most of the war years. All of our top secret materials, including uranium for processing, were being sent to the Soviet Union every day by American air crews and DC-4s long distance, flying through, I think it was Montana, might have been Wyoming, but anyway, Major Jordan's diaries. Read and be informed. Read and understand. Break the propaganda chains that bind you, because we have been lied to horribly, and it continues, and it's only going to get worse. Talking with Harry Cooper, of course, our friend of a long time now, and he has already told us about the next trip coming up. He has at sharkhunters.com compiled the most fascinating collection of real world history in terms of World War II that you'll find anywhere. It's just priceless, and I hope you'll take a chance. Go look. If you're just even halfway interested, I think you'll be amazingly surprised. Okay, I've got something else to do here if you want, but what's up next with you first?
I've just been playing solitaire on my computer here.
You winning?
Listening to your editorial, because like you say, I'm not going to make a comment.
Oh, no, you don't. No, I'm not speaking for Harry in any way, shape, or form. He speaks for himself. He's a big boy.
You and I know what I how I feel, but when I go to Germany, I don't want to get a tap on the shoulder and wind up.
No, no, you have never said anything out of line in any way. I have.
So where
according
are
to them.
where are we going from here now?
Well, here's another thing. There's a birthday coming up soon. Now, the big question is, why every year is this birthday noted except to disparage the man who is being marked on that day as having been born? There's a very strange irony to all of this. Now, this man, and I don't for a moment think that I am on my knees idolizing any human being. I don't do that. I'm a journalist. I was from a family of journalists. I was always taught to try to reflect and repeat reality and the truth. That's my job. It's not to interpret it. It's not to change the facts. It's to give people the facts and let them decide. Of course, with our dumbed-down society, people don't process information and don't think and have difficulty coming to logical conclusions anymore. There's too much noise out there. Now, this man, whose birthday is coming up in just a few days, was proven to be, at a young age, a gifted painter, an artist, and an architectural visionary. This young man enlisted in the First World War. He won 6 medals for abject bravery in the line of fire. He was a courier. He would run through the trenches, run through the fields, delivering messages forward and back. 6 medals for bravery. Remember, World War I was the first effort to destroy Germany. The English wanted the German nation spayed, neutered, castrated, and finished. And that's what World War I was really all about. All right. He also was the first head of state to promote a vegetarian lifestyle for everyone. He understood that meat was bad. He knew where it was going. He didn't force it on people, but he lived and tried to lead by example. This man whose birthday is noticed every year in the media, in the mainstream media, cursed and held up as a horrible monument to evil. This man also led a destroyed Germany after World War I. Total horror of World War I and the most outrageous treaty in history, I think, the Treaty of Versailles. He took Germany to the greatest social and political recovery in recorded history. 3 times on the cover of Time magazine, once Time magazine's Man of the Year. This man cleaned up Berlin from the dregs of the 20s and early 30s, of the perverted lifestyles imposed upon it by the communist Bolsheviks who flooded Germany with whorehouses, and drug dens, you name it. They were trying to take it down and take it over. The man whose birthday is coming up declared communism, Bolshevism, Marxism, and Freemasonry illegal. He destroyed their books and meeting places because he knew what they would do to a company's soul and its heart. They were like cancers. The man restored Germany's economy. He inspired an incredible upsurge in patriotism and optimism for a country that had been just butchered in World War I and sold out by that treaty I mentioned a moment ago. Put 10 million people back to work. Here in this country, we have 100 million Americans who are able-bodied and want to work, Harry, and there are no jobs for them.
Yeah, I know.
Because our alleged government has sent them all overseas, along with corporations who don't give a damn about this country, just about the buck. The man whose birthday is coming up next week gave honest money to his people. He saved jobs, homes, industry. He made the lives of Germans bearable again after having had them just ground into the muck after World War I. He really did care about animals. He had a great appreciation of nature. Look at the art. There are plenty of examples of his art.
He outlawed vivisection in Germany. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He outlawed vivisection.
He especially pushed for a healthy environment. inside the human body and without in the countryside. He was cared for by his people, not because he was a dictator, but because he was a teacher. He cared for the welfare of his people, just like Vladimir Putin cares for the welfare of Russia and its people. He knows what they went through, he remembers, and he doesn't want that to happen again. This man whose birthday is coming up soon noticed, he couldn't miss, that the country had been taken over in most major positions of power in banking, media, politics, and he felt that Germans should have equal opportunity in their own country. He created the first freeways and inexpensive, reliable automobiles for everybody. We know them as the Volkswagen, the VW, the Beetle. He sent many enemies of the state, Jews, communists, Bolsheviks, to work camps during the war, but only after world Zionism, call it Marxism, communism, Zionism, declared war on Germany in 1933. War, open war, economic war, did a lot of damage, tried to anyway. He only put them in work camps after trying to move them all to Madagascar, political prisoners, gypsies, all those he considered not worthy of participating in that country anymore. They were takers, they were criminals, and so forth, many of them. He couldn't move them to Madagascar, and even working with Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl, one of the great rabbis in Germany of the Jewish faith, offered to let them all go to neutral Spain. Nobody knows about that. Read Rabbi Wiesmandl's book, 10 Questions to the Zionists, and understand who's running the show. Zionism is a secular, non-religious movement of world domination and control. And if you think they haven't just about wrapped it up by now, folks, you haven't been thinking. This man, who today is painted as the greatest monster in history, was supported by, at minimum, 150,000 German Jews who voluntarily, heroically fought in the German army against the Soviet Bolshevik hordes. 150,000 German Jews. Were they drafted? No, they signed up. Again, he was three times on the cover of Time magazine, once Man of the Year. He also inflicted a brilliant preemptive strike, Operation Barbarossa, on the Bolshevik Russian communist hordes. There were well over a million of them who were within a couple of weeks of invading all of Europe. They were planning to roll all the way to the English Channel, and they might have done it had he not found out about it and launched a brilliant preemptive strike called Barbarossa. He is considered to be the man who built the gas chambers. Well, unfortunately, proven by the German and international Red Cross, state-of-the-art forensic testing and even ground-penetrating radar, the Holocaust didn't happen as it has been told. I'll leave it at that. He fought the non-Russian Bolshevik Zionists. I want to underscore that. The non-Russian Bolshevik Zionists who flooded into Russia and took it over, who had taken Russia in 1917 and installed communism. He fought against the New World Order. He knew what was coming. That man's birthday is coming up next week. Now, I would just ask you to open your mind and consider that we have been under constant propaganda since 1945, and it is only through the work of honest historians that we find out the truth. And the truth is vastly different than we have been told. What about Joseph Stalin? Have we talked about Lenin and Stalin? How many did they slaughter? How many Russians did they slaughter? Over 50 million. 50 million. All right? How about FDR and Pearl Harbor? He knew damn well Pearl Harbor was going to happen. Said nothing. They sent the aircraft carriers out of Pearl. The attack came, 3,000 American men, boys died. Roosevelt ran the most overtly communist regime in American history. And again, I urge you to read Major Jordan's diaries if you don't believe me. And back the Zionist Federal Reserve Bank, putting America forever under the boots of debt and usury. We are dying of debt today. All right? Remember, I told you last week, no, earlier this week, about the Bernard Baruch, Winston Churchill relationship. Look into that if you get a chance. Okay, so when you hear the press talk or read the press talk about the birthday of the evil Adolf Hitler, just understand there's far more to the story than you will ever be told. That's what journalism is supposed to give you. We don't have journalism here anymore. We have propaganda. And it's all run by a very small group of people who also control, own, and operate the government of these formerly United States of America. And I'll stop there. Did I miss anything, Harry?
I'm on my fifth game of solitaire here. You know, I stay out of that political side.
That's not your thing. But since it's World War II history, my contribution to it.
You said he was working for Germany for the Germans, and that's true. And you know my friend Jörg Haider, he ran on a policy of Austria for the Austrians, and he won a big victory in 2008 and was going to take Austria off the Euro and out of the European Union. And
he was going to free his people, free his country.
And he was going to kick out all the freeloaders that moved in, and he didn't live 3 weeks after that.
Similar kind of story, eh?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I was just over there picking up a bunch of photographs that pretty well proved that he was clipped.
Thank you. I appreciated getting a look at a couple of those.
Right.
More than outrageous. They kill people, folks. I say that all the time. In the last 3 days alone, three of Porky Porkoshenko's most fervent critics in Kiev have been murdered. I think the total now is seven murdered in the last month or two. It's a purge. They're killing opposition over there, and we are supporting them. American boys and girls are over there now, paratroops and troops, training Porky's pigs to fight in the east. They're going to go in and roll through the east, try to force Russia to come in and stop it.
And well, everybody's training everybody. You know from our daily Hotmail news things that the Chinese carrier pilots are in Brazil right now being trained by the Brazilian Navy carrier pilot.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And Brazil has a really serious Navy. They have a major Navy down there. They don't kid around. This is no banana republic down there. And they're training the Chinese carrier pilot. Also, here's something I haven't even had a chance to send out to our members yet on our Hotmail news, but watch for the third war of the Falkland Islands coming up.
You think it's going to go hot?
Oh, I know it is. From some of the stuff we've just got in, you know, the first battle of the Falkland Islands was 1915 when Germany offered to take the islands back from the Brits and give it to Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work. They lost their entire cruiser squadron. And the Brits lost most of their cruiser squadron. Then we all know what happened in 1980 when General Galtieri tried to take back the Falklands, or the Malvinas, as they're called. And now Argentina, I'm trying to remember because I just got it on the email a few minutes before you called to start the show.
Well, they have Russian, they've leased a whole squadron of Russian fighter craft, which has really irritated the British military.
Well, the Argentine government is bringing some kind of action against the offshore drilling platform.
Yeah, they're suing them. They're suing one of the major oil drilling companies.
Right, because, you know, lo and behold, we find that it's not only a choke point for any ships going around Cape Horn, but the area is loaded with natural
huge amount. Natural gas and oil, just it's enormous.
And just recently, just within the last couple of weeks, their president, Christina Kirchner, has signed a defense pact with Russia. So
now this would be interesting.
Yeah, Russia's going to be defending Argentina, and Russia is getting a very large presence in Argentina.
Well, this is interesting. This is all about BP, British Petroleum. This is what they want. They want the oil and gas.
And it's going to be pushing and shoving back there.
Well, it's very interesting. A couple other things I wanted to mention. That let me repeat that what I say is my opinion. It doesn't in any way necessarily represent Harry's or Shark Hunter's. But Germany in the 30s also was the first country in the world to declare war on smoking and war on cancer. All right? Think about that. Those are really remarkable things. Back in just a couple minutes. Okay, back with Harry Cooper of Shark Hunters. And as I said earlier, I was only speaking for myself, as I always do. The other issue is the way Shark Hunters have always honored American submariners, German. He knows people and was given the highest form of respect in the Soviet Union you can get. You met Vladimir Putin, didn't you?
Yeah, I met Putin. I spent about 15 minutes talking to him through a translator because he doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
He was very fluent in German because he was head of the KGB arm in East Germany, but I didn't speak German at all at that time. So, and he struck me as a guy who was very honest, very patriotic, and he was the guy who ain't going to back down to nothing. So you can rattle all your sabers. This guy isn't going to flinch. So
I think the lunatic fringe NATO owned and operated by the that banking cartel in the city of London, they're out of their minds. They're playing with fire. No.
Let me switch gears for a second here. I don't know if you've seen in the news where it was on the news, so you might have seen it. Amazon is going to start cracking down on people who post.
About time.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Fake,
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, fake reviews because, you know, my book is getting 5-star reviews from all sorts of people, but there's one guy, well, of course, there's one woman who says bad things about my book in there. I don't think she's ever read it. She's one of my neighbors. And she doesn't like me because she's a flaming liberal, and I'm a Republican. I'm on the Republican Executive Committee, and I was an officer there a couple of years ago. So anything I do is horrible to her. But this guy, Roger, I call him Roger, what's his name? The impotent nerd. He writes reviews.
This is about your book, Hitler in Argentina.
That's correct. He writes reviews that are darn near as long as my book.
Well, and that's a paid hit job.
Right.
And this is the suicide that never happened
exactly.
In the bunker.
Right. And he uses, you know, millions and billions of words, to borrow Carl Sagan's phrase.
Yeah, yeah.
To refute what is in my book that Hitler did not commit suicide in the bunker. And his logic is everybody knows he committed suicide in the bunker, and he goes on and on. And but
well, funniest thing in 1947, Joseph Stalin didn't, and you kind of think that maybe if anybody did, he would. He was furious because he knew he got away.
That's right. And in 1945, the FBI had documents flying every which way about Hitler's escape, and we're seeing them on the internet now. Those are documents that one of our guys got declassified about 7 years ago, and there's a whole lot more than what you see on the Internet. We've got them here, copies of them.
Yeah.
And so that's all in our book, Hitler in Argentina. And now we have a very well-placed agent deep in a major organization, and that's as much as I can say there. But we've been told that as of May the 1st, three fairly prominent writers, primarily from the occult and flying saucer genre, are going to start attacking my book, Hitler in Argentina. But we're kind of letting them know subtly that be ready for a counterstrike if they do. And if they start with Amazon, of course, we're going to go to Amazon. And now, Amazon is threatening to prosecute these people.
Good. Look, there. Every forum, every message board, wherever there are comments, I'm convinced that probably a good third of the comments are written by shills, written by people under aliases. They're not legitimate. They're really sewers. And it's a shame. But that's just the way it is.
Somebody suggested that I get a bunch of different alias emails and write good reviews. I've never done that. I've never written a review on my book at all. People like it, fine. God bless them. If they don't like it, that's their business. But if somebody's paid to badmouth it, and they, you know, one guy wrote in that it's just a cash cow for me and it's a good way for me to make a living. I don't take a dime from this book. I don't get a dime. I don't get a salary from Shark Hunters. I don't get nothing from Shark Hunters. Everybody who's on the masthead, from me all the way down, are volunteers. Every single person. Nobody gets a salary out of Shark Hunters. And as a matter of fact, every month when my retirement check comes in, I wind up writing a check into Shark Hunters to help defray the cost, because I don't want to push the cost back onto our members, because I know how badly they're suffering under this current regime in the White House. So,
Well, I wonder what salary someone like Morris Dees of the Southern Poverty Law Center gets every year.
Otherwise known as the Spitlickers.
Yeah.
And they've started attacking me. This woman called me about a year or so ago, a woman named Heidi. She has a doctorate in something or another. And then I found out later that she's referred to as Fat Heidi because she's 550-pound lesbian, and she is passing judgment. And as you'll see in some of the stuff that I'm about to release, Morris Dees, the founder, he came under some pretty heavy scrutiny a couple of years ago, something to do with his girlfriend or his second wife or something, had a daughter who was in her early teens, and something between him and her. I don't know. You got
just look up Morris Dees, MORRISDEES, Morris
right.
Dees.
Right.
Add any word you want. Pervert, criminal, whatever. You just have fun with it. It's a free country.
Yeah.
You can look up anything you want. See what comes up. See what kind of entries there are in there. I'm not saying he is either one of those. I'm just saying that's the way the Internet works.
Yeah, I've seen the listing where it says Morris Dees, pedophile. Now, whether he is or not,
I don't know. But that's how Google and search engines work.
Right.
So you don't want to put in there Morris Dees altar boy. There's a little double joke there.
You might, and what, again, you know, I don't know. Well, now you're aware that the Spitlickers or the SPLC used to get paid by the FBI to find and out subversive and hate organizations.
I don't know what a hate organization is.
Well, I don't know either, but all they have to do is say this is a hate organization, and it becomes one.
Yeah.
About a year ago, the FBI just pulled the plug and shut off the checkbook. Now, the Spitlickers, again, have listed Shark Hunters as a hate organization. And when this broad was on the phone with me, I'm telling her, you know, I said, look, I know where you're going with this because we have German members, but Ronald Reagan was a member. And the four Medal of Honor American submarine commanders were members, dues-paying members. Admiral Flucky, the most highly decorated submariner ever in American history, was a guest in my home. He was on our advisory board, which you are now.
Thank you.
He won the Medal of Honor, four Navy Crosses, and God knows how many other medals. He's not a hate group guy. We had Medal of Honor fighter pilots in membership. We had state governors, senators, congressmen, and we had the hierarchy of the Russian Navy. Those guys aren't Nazis, but it didn't matter because they wanted to paint the picture. And I'm about to start looking for a lawyer who wants to make a name for himself to sue those guys for defamation.
Well, I'm getting smeared the same way. The ADL has a grotesque write-up about yours truly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. For years and years.
Well, you're an evil sort of person, according to them, I guess.
Oh, worse than that.
Yeah.
Listen, here's a problem we face. This whole idea of allowing a small group to dictate to the masses what hate is.
Right.
What is hate? We know what the First Amendment is. If I want to hate someone, I should be allowed to hate someone, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's called the First Amendment, freedom of thought, freedom of speech. It's all inclusive.
Right.
There is another effort now by certain members who call themselves Jews who are pushing to have anti-Semitism, whatever that really is, declared internationally, worldwide, as a crime.
Oh, my.
If they get their way, anyone accused of being an anti-Semite will literally be arrested and extradited to stand trial at an international court of justice.
Justice.
That's what they're after.
Well,
okay? That's what they're after.
It's ridiculous.
Beyond belief. Beyond belief.
When somebody accuses me of hating anybody, I don't even hate the two guys that killed my son. One of these days, God's going to put them into my crosshairs, and I'll smilingly do what's necessary, but I don't hate them. I'll be happy to see them dead, but I don't hate them. I don't hate anybody.
No.
And
no,
I certainly don't hate...
It just takes your time and energy. There's no reason. No.
Right. And, Shark Hunters is a history organization.
Well, you are an historian, and I would rank you honestly right up there with David Irving or anyone else who is recognized as an authority.
He used to be a member of Shark Hunters until he ran into trouble with the law and went broke.
Well, Lady Renewal was on this program a couple of times.
Yeah, Lady Michelle, she's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
I've helped her. It's a long story, but there's a huge big manor house she bought up in north central Germany.
From Manfred?
Yeah, Manfred's house.
Uh-huh.
And there's a huge big long story there. Manfred has passed on. But the fat guy that was profiting off Manfred kept stalling her, and I was over in Germany with one of our members, Dr. Charlie Ellis, who is also roundly hated by the spitlickers.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that gave me that term, spitlickers.
Mm-hmm.
He and I were up in North Germany doing some research, and we were on our way to South Germany, and we had to pass within 20 kilometers of Manfred's house. Now, in Germany, normally you don't just drop in on somebody. It just isn't done. But, you know, what the heck, this guy was a friend of mine for 20-something years, and we were within 20 miles or 20 kilometers of his house. So we buzzed over there to say hi to him. And we found out that the manor house had been boarded up. The huge big stone porch had cracked and was falling off. The doors were locked. There were cobwebs all over everything. So I passed it on to Lady Michelle, and she realized that she was being lied to by the fat bank robber. And so she turned up the boost, and she was able to get the place and renovate it. And they have a summer solstice and a winter solstice celebration.
It's apparently, from the pictures you've shown, it's been brought back to its proper, elegant state.
Right. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
And, you know, it costs a fortune to heat them gigantic places. This one was 20 rooms.
Uh-huh.
And I personally hung huge big drapes over the archways from room to room so that Manfred could just close off certain sections and only heat the living section.
Oh, I thought you said grapes.
No, not grapes. Grapes. Big, huge, heavy brown grapes.
Uh-huh.
And, he was just such a nice guy, but then he fell onto ill health. And this fat guy that I thought was an American because his English was so incredibly good, he met Manfred in prison. He was convicted of armed bank robbery, this guy. He didn't know they were going to rob a bank. He just thought some friends needed a ride to the bank.
Of course, that always happens.
Yeah, right. And so, but anyhow, in Germany, if you are the caregiver for an elderly person, the state gives you a bunch of money. And he was also bleeding Manfred of his money, including that one room that I used to stay in had an original painting by Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing suddenly disappeared. The fat boy sold that. And he was also importing fighting dogs from Hungary, I think it was, into Germany. And
well, there are people like that all over the place. And
yeah.
But anyhow,
Lady Michelle is doing great things there. And, of course, she's considered some kind of a hate person,
too.
Oh,
please. You don't... So tell her hello for me, will you?
I will. I'll probably be talking to her at least electronically in the next couple of days. A very nice lady.
Please give her my best.
Yeah. And she was a countess. She married a Russian count who was a psychiatrist. And then she married after she split with him or he died or whatever. Then she married a fellow in England and became Michelle Lady Renouf. Nice lady, very nice lady.
Yep. You've had a wonderful life. Shark Hunters is not only, and you've got to get, you can get, are you still giving a free complimentary issue of the magazine?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If any of your listeners want to send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and just say that they heard us on the show tonight and would like the current issue, I'll send it to them electronically. Once in a while, we get somebody that gives me their whole mailing address, and I have to tell them, nope. If you're a member and you want it hard copy, okay, fine. That's what you pay for. But the freebies, no, because it costs us about $2, $2.50 each to print the magazine, and it costs about $2 more to mail it.
Hmm.
And we don't even mail them out of the United States anymore. It used to be like 87 cents.
It's a big scene.
It's almost $6 each issue now to mail to another country.
Yeah.
So we just can't do it.
No, well, you got the internet, and the electronic version is just fine. People can actually download it and print it out if they want.
Well, exactly. And if members happen to have a hard drive crash, or they push the wrong button and they erase an electronic issue, all they do is send us an email and say, hey, look, I lost issue number, whatchamajigger, I just pushed the button and they've got it right back. But if they lose a hard copy, they're out of luck because we don't have any extras. Back in the old days, before the cost got so high, we'd have maybe 200, 300 extra overrun and we could send that out. Now it's just too expensive. We order exactly what we need. We've got thousands of members and 152 of them wanted by hard copy. Okay, fine, if that's what they want, fine. But only in the U.S. with the hard copy. Because I think either somebody in the international mail community, they're trying to make too much money, or maybe it's a barrier to keep too much information from going back and forth. I don't know.
Well, it's all predicated on the lie, the complete fiction of the so-called global war on terror.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Oh, let's not forget global warming.
Oh, God. Have you ever seen more scams in your life being perpetrated?
And the sad thing is people vigorously object to you trying to show them that it's baloney.
Oh, they'll go after you.
Yeah.
They don't just object.
Here in our local newspaper, which we call the mullet wrapper, you have a letter to the editor column. Mm-hmm. And every so often over the winter, especially when the people up north got hit with such horrendous snowstorms,
mm-hmm.
I'd make a comment in letters to the editor about, we're being hit with all this global warming. Oops, I'm sorry. It's called climate change now because global warming isn't. And climate change is ambiguous, and invariably two or three of the liberals would pop right back with some scathing rebuttal. Then finally, after about the third or fourth time, I put in a post that reminded them about Dr. Pavlov ringing his bell and the dog starts salivating.
Right.
And so I explained that every time I put in a post like that, I'm like Dr. Pavlov, and I can expect the liberals to come running out of their kennels, drooling all over themselves, and damn, I didn't get another two or three more letters arguing with that, but basically proving my point. You ring the bell, they come running out, and I suggest in my letters that we should all hold hands and sing Kumbaya while everything collapses around us. I forget I'm dealing with people of lower intellect.
By design, they're taking it down. They're not, they're not nurturing and encouraging young people. I got a fantastic email from a young man that I'm going to have to write him an answer. I don't know how old he is, 20, 21, 22. He gets it. He intuitively has, he said, my whole life I've intuitively, since I was thinking about things, understood that the world was controlled by a small group of people, if you want to call them that. And he has found the website and the program, and he's listening. And it was a wonderful email he sent. And I'll try and get
actually,
time to.
Actually, you cannot name one single war that has been for anything other than money.
None. No.
Every single one.
Well, what did General Smedley Butler say? He said, war is a racket.
Yeah.
It's a monetary racket.
Right.
We're enforcers for corporations, and that's it.
Yeah, for whoever, the Crusades to rescue the whole holy city. No, it was to keep the spice routes open.
Yeah.
And the Trojan War had nothing to do with the king, whatever his name is, his wife running off with Paris. It had to do with keeping the route open across the Dardanelles.
It's all disgusting.
And great, people they consider great right now. Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, my number one hero in the whole world. And those guys, they're considered great conquerors. What did they do? They ran over other people's cities, attacked them, killed all the men or sold them into slavery, raped all the women, and looted the treasuries. But these are great men now, according to history. And there are those who predict that that's the way Hitler will be looked on in another 100 or 200 years. Who knows? I'm not going to be here to see it.
Who knows?
According to the VA doctor, I won't be around for another 15 more years. I'll be dead before 15 years go by. I told him I hope I didn't disappoint him, but I'd be at his funeral.
Good one. Very good.
Yeah, well.
All right, so we're coming up on the 70th anniversary of the suicide that didn't happen.
Correct. 30th of April, 1945, Hitler allegedly blew his brains out and Eva Braun took poison, but it just did not happen. Hitler was gone, we figure, on the 23rd, because that was the last time he ever signed any orders. After that, it was all Martin Bormann. Mm-hmm. We know they got out. We know where they went. We got proof positive in the book, Hitler in Argentina. Anybody who reads that book and still thinks he blew his brains out because the government said so, there's no hope for him.
No, there isn't. And most of the people who criticize the book have not read it.
Exactly. Oh, well, we know Hitler committed suicide in the bunker because we were told.
That's right.
We also believe there's a fat guy in a red suit going to come down my chimney on Christmas Eve with a bag full of toys.
Odds are about equal.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Harry, thank you for being here again. Congratulations, as always, on the marvelous work that you and your wonderful organization, and all of you who are listening out there, I salute you. No matter what army you were in, no matter what you did, and you get it. You understand.
And next month, I think I'll have a lot of really new stuff. I've got a lot of stuff in the background that I'm going to pry open very shortly.
All right, sir. Take care of yourself. Say hi to the family.
Will do. And you guys out there in the Northwest, you have a great evening.
Thanks, Harry. Good night.
Good night.
Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Just remarkable. Ask for a free copy of their electronic version of their wonderful magazine, and just do a little walk through history. It's extraordinary. All right, we'll be right back with hour number 3 in just a couple minutes.